My name's Kevin McKelvey. I'm a musician. I'd like to say first, God made me a musician. I've been playing piano and keyboards since I was 7 years old, and that was a long time ago. Actually, I've been playing professionally since about 1976. So, I've been around the block a few times. I didn't become a Christian until 11 years ago. So God took me on the long way around to get to where I was going to. But I guess I've been preparing for being a worship keyboardist for a long time. And God has been gracious to me, merciful, and He's elevated me in recent years to the position of musical director and worship leader in my church, and that's a huge blessing, and I count it as His hand at work in my life, and He is good. I found one of my favorite verses from the Psalms, Psalm 33: "Sing joyfully to the Lord, you righteous. It is fitting for the upright to praise Him. Praise the Lord with the harp. Make music to Him on the 10-stringed lyre. Sing to Him a new song. Play skillfully and shout for joy." Now it can be a 10-string lyre or an 88-note keyboard. Or actually I've never actually counted the strings in a piano. They are more than 88. Well, they're a triple on some and two on another and one. I should know that probably. I've been a pianist for too long not to. I've been praising Him on that piano and with my keyboards and other instruments for a long time. In fact, I was hired into my church unsaved. Church was looking for a piano player, and it was right coming up on Christmas time in 1994, and you got to have a piano player at Christmas time. How do you play all those Christmas hymns? So, and the carols and all. So they hired me unsaved, and it's all part of my testimony. It's like I told my wife, "Now don't worry, honey. They won't get me. It's just a job. It's just a gig." Because of the time we were, I wouldn't call us practicing Catholics, but we were attending a Catholic church, and that's where our children had been baptized in that church and other things. But it only took about 6 months for God's word to break through, and I always like to say it was the song, "Lord, I Lift Your Name on High," that finally kind of was the one that broke through. "You came from heaven to earth to show the way, from the earth to the cross, my debt to pay." So that song was kind of the song that musically, like my big knucklehead, it finally broke through, and the gospel message became clear. And after that happened, I considered myself saved, was baptized, etc., etc. So, but 11 long years at my church, Living Spring in Garden Grove, I've come through a long period of time. And basically, when we came up with this title for the class, "I'm a Worship Keyboardist, Now What?" I imagined it even as myself coming out of the professional realm of music and being put up an altar, and what are you going to do now? How are you going to approach this thing called... I didn't even consider it being a worship keyboardist. I thought I was just an accompanist, a pianist. They're going to put music in front of my face, and I'm gonna do it. Because I had a whole genre to learn. What is Christian music? What is it? What do we do with it? And I like to think of it as, let's say you have a church, or maybe you hire a worship leader, and they're new to your church, and they've been there a couple of weeks or months or years, and you know what? He says, "I'm tired of beating on this piano, on this guitar all by myself. Is there anybody in the church that plays piano?" You say, "Well, Judy over there played for about 10 years. She's pretty good on the piano." So you grab Judy and you put her up on the altar at the piano and say, "All right, now you're a worship keyboardist." And Judy goes, "Now what?"
What is she supposed to do? And that's why I put now what, even with a couple of, you know, symbols up there that mean, like, she's really confused. And so it can be somewhat confusing at first. So I'd like to ask you are you all, except for my guitar player friend here, are the rest of you all keyboard players or associated with keyboard players? No?
I play like 5 songs.
Okay.
And know like 17 chords.
All right. I play maybe 2 songs on the guitar because I know like 3 chords. Though I understand I can do hundreds of songs with those 3 chords.
That's right. Well, that's the thing.
But I'm working on that still. So, but I like to tell people I don't know I know as much about a neck of a guitar as a broomstick. So that's about it. So some of you are piano players though, or keyboardists, right? Do some of you read music? All of you read music? Okay. No. Because that's so that can be sometimes key to what you're doing, but it's not necessary. It is not. I refuse to say that too emphatically that it's a great assistant to what you do if you can read music, because it really breaks down a lot of barriers that you may have. But certainly you can communicate your language. And how many of you consider yourself being able to improvise with what you do, so you're not locked into just the notes on the page or something? Good. And how many of you are currently worship leaders or band leaders right now? And any of you? Just yourself? A couple of you?
Never.
Okay. All right. So I guess taking it from this level of what to do now is probably a good place to start. So that's what I intend to do. They say the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. So if you'd like, I'd just like to take a moment just to pray for this, and that this is all going to be a good time for us. Father, I thank you for bringing these people into my seminar right now. And Father, I ask that you would give me wisdom and discernment to be able to communicate to them what they want to hear, and that they would be bold with their questions on how to... on how to understand this thing called being a worship keyboardist. And Father, we give this time over to you and ask you to bless it in your name. Amen. Amen. So, playing in a worship band. A lot of it will depend on your level of skill and what you bring. And a lot of it will depend on the music that they put in front of you. I assume that most of you have somebody who is a music director or someone like that, or yourself, who handles pulling the music and putting that up in front of you. And, you know, there's lots of different styles of music. I'm talking in my other class about charts and what they do and how to use them. But, you know, we see a lot of these chord over charts, which are the most the simplest form of that you'll find, and that doesn't necessarily give a pianist a lot of information. You know, I mean, just hold down this note. That doesn't seem to do much. No, of course. So for chords, you need to start developing really early on as a worship keyboardist your knowledge of chord theory, and be able to work your way around the keyboard. You know, somebody who would come in really, really young or with very little knowledge, gosh, I could just think it could be very difficult in the beginning. And that's why I spent most of my time learning chords and things like that. Really was in my my teen years at about 15. I went to my high school music teacher and told him I wanted to be a musician. And he said, "Don't do it. Do something else." I said, nope, I'm going to do it. I've made the decision. And so he said, "Well, okay, come join my choir next semester and come and take my music theory class." And so he started me learning the nuts and bolts, and that's where he gave me... Now, this was after 8 years, 7 or 8 years taking lessons from a teacher, and we had very little theory after years and years. I mean, I had a complete area of the music world that I had no concept of. And so he started teaching us about theory. You start learning the basics and the ins and outs of it with simple chord theory being that if you understand the scale tones and then being able to attach chords to them and how they work in and out. Of course, 1 and 8 is going to be your octave in the key of C. That's always going to be your dominant chord at each end of, your key chord. If your 2 chord is going to be a D minor chord, understanding that because it's a minor. And these are how the things are built. Do everybody here know about this stuff generally? What this means, if you see that? Because what it is simply is you can take your simplest 8-note scale, C, right? And you build a triad on each of those notes. Everybody knows what a triad, right, is, right? Simple C chord. Right? The same 3-note. Well, that was the first chording that I did at age 6 years old or something like that. 7 years old, you know, mom figured out I understood that, and so it was piano lessons next. So, and my mother was, could have been a concert pianist, decided to have her kids instead. God bless her. And she really could have. She's, you know, you hear her going on some Chopin or some of the Czerny exercises she used to do, and it's just mind boggling. So, anyway, you build the triad on these different tones. The one is C. 2, you build it on D minor, on the D note, and it's a minor chord. It always is, always will be, unless you raise the 3rd. You know, what is that? So, and all the numbers, they get confusing because the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 will mean different things in different chords because I'm building the 3rd note built on the 2 is an F, and that makes it a minor 3rd. And you know, everything gets very convoluted, but you keep building your notes on them and you keep walking up, and the 3 notes keep making a certain pattern. E minor, F, A minor, and B diminished. Okay? Now, you take these, and then you start building all kinds of songs with them. You know, your basic 3-chord rock tunes are all based on C, F, and G, or using the G as the root, and flat 7, F, and C. And there's, you know, like we said, there's books with 103-chord guitar tunes. And they'll be built on some form, usually, of those chords. Usually maybe in the key of E or key of A or something different. But still, most music is built of that. And most jazz music is all considered to be built on the 2, 5, 1. Which is the basic turnaround of most jazz music. And you can keep going. You know, any 2-5-1 pattern will take you around to a different root. So most jazz tends to be built on those kind of changes. So for our purpose, for playing in worship and understanding it, you want to get some kind of basic knowledge about the chords and how they work, and depending on the kind of music that you're presented, you'll want to figure out how it works. Now I've got a simple one here. Let me use this. It's a song called Hallelujah Glory. It's one we've been doing for a number of years at our church. This is a very simple handmade chart with just enough information to get you in trouble. It's written over time, which are the slashes and the bars, and so we can understand what section we're in where. You'll see it says VS for verse, chorus down here, so you know what section you're in. And as we follow a chart like this, we would say, well, what would I do with this if I'm presented with it? Well, this is a very driving eighth note song, actually, so we, you know. So if you have a bass player, tell him to play the eighth note, dun 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 dun. And you're just going to be driving and coming up with a pattern. Now, where do you understand patterns and how to play them? Well, that's, you know, a lot of things you're going to have to dig into a piano and learn simple things about rhythm, about syncopation. They have classes on this. A lot of the different community colleges in the area and all over the, you know, any place will have sometimes classes on keyboard and keyboard improvisation.
and things like that. If you don't know anything about it, find a simple basic class and go take it. You know, piano improv 1, you know, or 100 or something like that at a junior college or something like that. Because those, I took a lot of those classes when I was young, and they were extraordinarily valuable. They teach you a lot of things that you would maybe never consider on your own. Of course, the other great place to listen to is listen to the music that you love. You know, I grew up with Elton John, Billy Joel. Those people were the people that were, you know, playing piano. You know, any of the Beach Boys stuff had music driving through it. Any rock and roll. You know, even, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis, any of that stuff will always give you ideas of something to emulate as you're playing and as you're learning. So you learn something about rhythm. The most simple form of backing something up would just be, or simply the, you know, or finding some different way to do it. Alleluia, glory. Next one would be, this would be what I would consider just be like a driving rock style. It's finding the different accents you want to accent as you go and using it in earth and music. And this type of thing will work in just about any song, like Lord, I Lift Your Name on High. Lord, I Lift Your Name on High. Find a chord and you're just simply driving time. And it'd be the same thing. A guitar player would be hitting the chords and playing a different rhythm, or maybe a complex rhythm. So all those different things would work, but you would want to get a sense of, if you've got a guitar player and he's playing a lot of rhythm, then the keyboard player, you don't want to be playing a lot of rhythm with him, because we want to look for different ways of reflecting what each other is doing and creating so we're not always playing every note all the time. So if he's guitar player's got a busy part, then you want to be playing maybe less. You can also use things like that. You hear me breaking the chord up. You can also use different passing chords in what you're doing. I'm doing? Well, every chord generally has some ability to use any one of these notes that are assigned to it. Now, in the country music, you'll hear a thing that they do called, they'll call it number charts. Okay? And a number chart, what you're going to get is this. Instead of a chord over chart with the letters, it's going to say 1, 4, 5. Sometimes I'll put maybe a 5, even a 7 over it, you know, and a 1. Okay? What this means is, what key are we in? E. So this is an E, A, B. Okay? What key are we in? Oh, she sings a lower. She doesn't C. Great. C, F, G. Okay? So this allows you to play in any key. All you need to do is, you know, give me the key, and then I can figure out where I'm going. Okay? Well, built on all these different scale tones, a lot of times any 4-chord or something will work on it. If you're in C, and you go to F, okay, then you can usually play the G minor over it, which is what? It's a 2-chord above it. F, G. Okay? Those kind of relationships take time to understand. So that allows you to take 2 chords and start really starting to create something around it.
So you jump up to the next number if you're within
the structure of the harmony. You know, you sometimes got to listen and make sure you're not clashing with something else that's going on around you.
Well, yeah.
But generally, what I'm saying is, for the keyboardist,
usually allows them to be a lot more freer. Because if you're playing like a steady rhythm, or maybe you're playing fourths or fifths, you're just picking out stuff, that leaves a lot of room for the piano player to add some different color to what they're doing. And generally that's what this is considered. Because if all we're doing is playing open fifths, that's not very pianistic. Sometimes it can be used for good effect, but at the same time, we're missing a lot of notes. And I'll tell you one thing that it's not something I've been prideful about, Lord, but the piano, there's no other more expressive instrument because of the amount of notes you can play. And that can become too much, too. But you have you have every note and every in-between note, and if you're playing quarter tone music, you'd have even more than that. But you just have so much range, you have so many notes available to you. A guitar player can get a lot of notes with a guitar, especially if they get into wild voicings and things like that. But at the same time, I think as a pianist, I have much more ability to be much more florid in the kind of music and harmonies and different things that you can work into what you're doing, depending on your level. So, like I said, we have a lot of different styles, and they're for most of what we're doing in the pop styles, anything that drives. If you're in 12/8, you have a lot of. Or in the 6/8 stuff, like I heard them do Indescribable today. Drive the rhythm and fit into what the rest of it is doing. The other key to what you're doing might be that you've got bass, drums, and guitar, which of course a lot of praise bands do. Great. So what does that mean the keyboard is going to do? You want to add, if you're just playing piano, you want to add support for those chords when they change, and maybe adding color to it. To do. The other thing you may want to do is actually be playing the melody with it. Because why is that good? It sometimes helps. Congregation will sometimes like to hear that melody being played. Okay? It's also approaching even any song like a hymn. Because what are in the hymns? The hymn's going to have, I've got one example here, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. So your hymn book is going to have all your lyrics, it's going to have your melody on top, and then it's going to have, in a lot of cases, some kind of either a piano part or all the vocal parts. This is SATB for a hymnal, out of the old hymns of the Family of God. I think Songs of the Family of God. It's the hymnal of our church. So you'd have that melody in there. If you have some instrument that is playing it, it helps to reinforce the congregation because they're hearing the hymn, hearing the melody as well, as well as from your worship leader, as well as maybe from your worship team or singers, etc. So being able to drive that melody is one thing that'll help. A lot of different styles. I am not adept at all styles. I'd say that Latin is probably my, I'm not really, I wouldn't be very good at those styles, but I have, like Morning at the Dancing. The original chart that Tommy had. This was one of the original versions of it.
It's a three-page chart. I took it and made a one-page reduction of it. So here's that long intro lick that I just played at the top, written out in both clefs, treble and bass, so that whatever instrument could represent it.
We hadn't heard that song in years, and we listened to it on a CD on the way down yesterday. Long
thing. Cool.
Ron can always leave.
Yeah, yeah. The Lift Him Up?
Yeah.
Excellent.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
When I play, like, the five songs I play, the two basic left-hand things is octaves and arpeggios off of a chord of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, I don't know, looking for permission? Is that okay? I don't see you going nuts with your left hand. It's not like playing classical music where you're all over the place with both hands.
Yeah, that's a good question. They've also asked me, if you don't mind, that we're supposed to repeat the questions because everybody might not hear it. What to do with the left hand is a good question. Octaves are good. I'll play octaves. You know, it's different when you're on a keyboard like this. I love to dig into my acoustic piano. At my church, we've got a Yamaha C7, beautiful piano, and I play the heck out of it. I really do. I dig really deep. I love the low end on them. But at the same time, and why the question is good, is you have to consider your bass player. And if you've got a fine bass player, maybe you don't want to muddy up too much of what he does. Our bass player is very good, but he's no Jaco Pastorius or Nathan East. So I will play strong in the left hand to support him. But I mean, usually I don't myself. I've grown really accustomed to trying to either support them or allow them to play that bass out and not try to be too heavy on it, because there's you can have issues. I mean, sometimes it's good to double up with what he's doing, and there's such a great tone out of the low end of a piano, especially for some of the music that we'll do. But you just don't want to get too crazy with it, I think. So you want to try to avoid doing too much. When I'm playing by myself, it's not a big deal. And I'm supporting then what my right hand is doing with the left, and running out of room down here. So. But there are cases where you can do more with it. In fact, sometimes you may want to do rhythms, and like you could add something like, what's one thing I could do? Well, okay, here, for instance, in Hallelujah Glory, we never actually got to the chorus. So those are good things. So if you look for a particular riff, a lick that you can play with it, that's one thing. But generally, I'd say if your bass player is good, or if he's playing strong, don't muddy up too much of what he does. It's a hard thing to learn. I learned it by playing with a very good piano player in the early years of my working as a worship keyboardist. He'd tell me, get out of that left hand, Kevin. Stop playing so much in the left hand. Okay, all right. This guy was a guy who was just a phenomenal bass player and a good friend. He's I believe he's the regular bass player at Mariners Church, which is just up the street from here. Some of you may have heard of that church. I have many good friends that play there. So those are some things about style. I could show you some various particular styles. The only other thing I'd probably want to show you really is how to go into what we call slower worship or inner court music, things like that. We'll talk more about this. But as we go into that stuff, it becomes just much less movement, just enough to usually support what's being sung. What's one I can do here? Like Above All Else.
very simple, with a melody. Too much. You're in what we call inner court worship, slow worship, and you want to really want to be sensitive to everything that's going on during those times. And if you're the leader, you're trying to drive that time, but we're driving slow, and we're keeping it very sensitive for what's going on because it's easiest altar time. You have people coming forward. It's prayer time. And it's the same type of thing that you can use to what we call underscore for during speaking or praying. And when you're doing that, if there's a song that you're in the middle of and they're praying, so they just want you to bring it down so they can pray under it. So for that kind of thing, you just come down. Time going, but you're just playing very out. And even that for me is sometimes too much motion for prayer. So usually for that, I would go into just completely out of time. Take some of this down a little bit. And you just let your improvisation kind of go with it. And if you listen to the flow of the prayer and stuff like that, usually you can kind of answer it. When they come to the end of a sentence, you got, and you can just kind of just weave in and out. The thing you don't want to be doing is when they're in the middle of praying and stuff, you know. You can go way overboard, way easy. There's a time and a place for being really floored and showing your chops. That's great, but not in that kind of quiet setting, because you know, as I was saying, you know, somebody's praying about their Aunt Judy is sick, and you're up there, you know, like I was saying, like the guitar player, you know, like driving and playing too loud with this stuff. So you want to be really sensitive to how that's working. So you can, like I said, you can play out of time or in time, but you generally want to consider yourself at that point. Supporting, you're just supporting prayer. And there's times when you don't want to play. You know, every time somebody goes into prayer is not a time to go into one of your. You know, there's times when you should just let the word of prayer speak and let there be air. You know, so you want to sometimes, you got to sometimes think and you got to make judgments about when is the best time to play and when not to. And it's a thing you pick up with time. Time will tell you how much and you want to do. Now, other things you can do is I wanted to demonstrate really quickly for me, as I'm also here with Yamaha this week, and we have some great instruments that you can test out. Our new CP300 stage piano. We've also got a Motif ES6 down there. And how fast it is to be able to set up a sound on this using its great voices. I'm going to go into a performance sound here. Let's see, this is the sound right now. Which might be a little too heavy for worship. So, go away. So, what I'm going to do, first thing I'm going to do, and I'm going to do this fast, just because I want to demonstrate how easy it is sometimes to program these things when you want to. I'm going to perform a job on it, which is just wipe my sound clean, please. And it's gone. Let's say I want to do maybe something with a piano and a strings. Now, we do have something like that in here, but I'm going to make one of my own. So I'm simply going to add a voice. I'm going to add an internal voice and go over to my strings in what we call category search and simply call up an ensemble group of strings. Boom, it's done. Now, if I had a pedal, I could assign it specifically to the strings and control it. I don't have one right now, so I'll just do it manually. And so you can be doing something and the band can be playing and you want to just add some backing strings to it. Yeah, you can control those. You know, you can assign it to its own MIDI channel and then control that MIDI channels. We have a page in here where you can go to and shut off the... so it won't read the pedal volume on the piano part. So the only one that will actually be changed would be the string. And using strings like that can be really, really nice balance. Now, with this keyboard, you can add, like I said, we've got those very airy pads. We've got very nice bell kind of effects. We've got all our great digital piano sounds and things in here. So you can add all this stuff and really create some what we'd call layering, layer sounds. You can layer in this keyboard up to 4 different sounds, all stacked on top of each other, and controlling their volume separately. Using either the faders here or assigning them to pedal and bringing them up at different times, which is really cool. You can also even you can stack these with even more effect, like I did on that same sound I already played. I'll go back to it again because it starts with this sound, electric piano, and then bring the analog, it's called, underneath. And then you can open up the filter on it. And really create some brightness on it. And there's a long way to go too. But you can use these to support what you're doing. And you don't have to do a lot sometimes. See, what I'm using now, and this is very cool for me, is I've got my big Yamaha piano. I take out the music stand, I put this inside. Okay? Now I still need the music stand, so I put the music stand even farther on the top of this, so it's actually sitting up on the side, but we keep the piano lid closed. We've got 2 condenser microphones that we've got inside. It's kind of a trick. We're using duct tape. And we create a little shelf and put the... And my sound man learned this. This is what they do at Crystal Cathedral on their piano. So they put... Except they're, of course, using a couple of Neumann microphones there. So, but I'm using a couple of condensers, barrel head condensers. And so they're on the top of the strings. And so this is in there. And so now this allows me... What I was having trouble with is going right to left, kind of come out to the side to play the motif, or coming over this way. So I solved it by just putting it inside. And now my access is great. I've got the keyboard right in front of me. I can play standing up if I want to, which I don't do very often. But I've got it available. So I've got the best of both worlds ready to go. And so I can have the piano. I can be using them both as a two-hand situation. Of course, you can do things depending on your own setup. If you've got some kind of 88-note keyboard and maybe a 61-note like this or a synthesizer or something like that on the top, they have dual-layer tier stands you can use. They even have a three-tier if you want to look like Keith Emerson from 1976. So you can do all that stuff, stack them up high. But if you have access financially and or in your worship team, the ability to afford to add to your technology, that's a really cool thing to be able to do. And the more sounds you have available to you, I believe that the more you'll be able to get out of your worship scene. Just in terms of, you know, what I like to do is just we add harmonic color with the piano and with keyboards, and we can also add sonic color to what we're doing, and it can alter and change a song depending on how you approach it, by taking it just away from piano and adding other sounds to it, adding something like the analog effect. In fact, we did just this last week, How Great Thou Art, and I started it with this sound. And I cried. And I don't have my lyric in front of me, because there's a lot of lyrics in that song.
Yeah.
Oh my God, when I in awesome wonder considered all the worlds I had to have made. So I had this down. I had it controlled. I'm also on in-ears. And so this is my sound man who has all control over what I'm using. And so I added that. And then I got to the second verse, and I went to the piano. And then when I got to the third verse, I added strings to it. When Christ shall come. So as I added to it, I added strings, and I was doing arpeggios with the left hand, filling it out, and playing the strings and supporting. So it was a lot, almost like an orchestral effect when we were done. So it was very big, very bold, and very uplifting. It was a great moment, because it's when you feel the key change, you get to that third verse of, you know, everybody stood up. Nobody had to say stand up, church, because everybody just lifted. You know, so it was very effective. So, and that's one of the things that's sometimes difficult to try to understand and to be able to do, is to have that effect of being able to of create a sense when you're playing of creating depth in the music and adding to your team. Guitar players have pedals and different things, and we have access to more sounds that we can add. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to be you don't want to be too aggressive. You don't want to move people too quickly. There's still so many churches that still only have maybe a piano and an organ. I mean, how many of you are you guys using keyboards or pianos? Some of you have keyboards that you use. What kind of keyboards? Just throw a name or two out. And it doesn't have to be Yamaha. It's okay.
Roland.
A Roland keyboard?
No,
key 250. Stage piano. Great board. Great board. Yeah. They, you know, these things will start you off. And then you can dig in and find some of those other sounds and just add to them. You can do a lot with it. Let's see. I wanted to talk some about, as we said, when not to play. There are we have to, as keyboardists and instrumentalists, we have to know that there are levels to what we're going. And sometimes you just want to take your hands off the piano. You don't have to play every beat, every measure. We can allow the guitar player to drive a section. If you're in worship, you can have somebody's. My cell phone is going off, and nobody knows. It's my brother. He's not going to get answered right now.
I should have shut it off. But this isn't a theater. As you're adding, it sounds like I got distracted. What was I just? You went not to play. As you're going along, and you give a section of the music to the guitar player to play, especially if you're in soft worship, you can have. It's really great if you have acoustic players and they're finger picking, and let them take that section. Let them go. Take your hands off. You don't have to play all the time. Consider when you can add the most to what's going on at a particular time. And it's going to ring because my voicemail always rings no matter what I'm doing. I can put it on really discreet and have the vibrate on, and then the voicemail comes, ring, in the middle of church or whenever. Turn it off, Kevin. So knowing when to play and when not to play will also help you add depth to what's going on, being able to discern when the best times to play are, and when you want to back off. When you have a breakdown in a song is considered when you break down simply just the drums and vocals, or you have some section where you just let the vocals of the church and either hand clapping or the drums play along, and so you back out of that too. Don't play. So understanding, see, messages in. So the when to play and when not to play can be a good thing to experiment with as you're going. The technology we have can really add some great things to what we're doing, and adding keyboards, or adding also, and some of these keyboards will have loops that you can drop in, or like a drum machine, something that you can add to your rhythm. Very popular with a lot of what youth are doing, and they work very well for a lot of other things that we're doing. So the adding technology can do a great things to what you're doing as well. I wanted to take some time to show how we can add to some of the songs that we have. For instance, you have a lot of these taking the great hymns of the faith and turning them into new songs. Everybody knows "To God Be the Glory," right? Let's go back to just old piano. Sorry. Very simple. Okay. 3-4 and a little bit in an old style. Well, Tommy Walker, one of my favorites. Always loved Tommy. I was blessed to be able to hear him record his album at the Purpose Driven Concert Worship Conference last year. And when he did it, he did his version of "To God Be the Glory," which is now in 6-8 and has this kind of feel. To God be the glory, great things he has done. In 6-8. So love he the world that he gave us his son. Fresh air into a song. And Promise Keeper has been doing this for 10 years, taking great songs and doing new versions of them, and it just breathes new life into the hymns, which are so deep, so theologically perfect, and they speak to generations of Christians. And I always get just great responses from usually all ages, but especially the people who've heard these songs for 30, 40, 50 years, and they just love hearing these hymns come back. And then a lot of these guys are writing new sections. So there's a, it's got kind of a lift in it, which goes, glory, 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 give him the glory, great things he has done. So they're writing new sections to them, and which help expand it. So taking something like that is, again, it's in the, like I said, 6/8 time. To play a certain rhythm and get it to work in 6/8. You have guitars are usually on those. Not usually it's the piano in that situation with can do all the fill in, because the guitar, if he's not picking the 6/8, he'll actually be just playing the. That's what the guitar playing a lot of times in those cases will be doing. Say some strumming with it, but they're playing the chords. So the room for you is to be expansive on it, and you can play that melody, or like I said, you can be more floored in a thing like that. So et cetera, et cetera. So, so that's a one example of that. I have another one which is very good, the old hymn, O Worship the King, which is also the same kind of feel in 6/8. And what was the other one I had? Actually, most of them are in 6/8. Isn't that funny? Well, why is that? Well, that's because most of them started in 3/4. So we can't take them too far from where they live. There was one. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about this one. Here's The Wonderful Cross. It's a more recent version of When I Survey the Wondrous Cross, which was in 3. And this is it wasn't 3. I can't remember now. Well, it's definitely got a new bridge on it, a new chorus. Oh, the wondrous cross. You know, new sections and breathing new life into these songs. It's cool stuff. So, let's see. Other things that I can show you with this. What can I do here? Oh, that's right. Simply being able to read one of these chord over charts and what to do with it. Or this is a bar chart, actually. But you can see that it's got this weird chord called a D5. Yeah. And so when you, that's a guitar chord, basically. But how do you make something like that work? I would say going to different things like arpeggiating. Because you don't want to just driving a... That's a guitar player's job. He's going to play those open fifths. Or play, maybe he's playing them in a rhythm. But for you, you can create movement with it. Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. Because it's all D5 over a moving bass. So you can create some kind of, you can create harmonic chords to use with it. Those will work as well, using those two chords, three chords. Let's start digging into anything that maybe you have some questions about, or something you think I maybe haven't covered here yet.
The guy who plays here, Phil Salas, I play here too, so I always watch what he does, and he puts a lot of jazz sounds in it. And I sit there and I'm like, where do they go? It's like you pull them out of thin air. So can you say something about adding a little color jazz style without changing the style of the worship song?
Yeah, so he's just, he's adding, what would you call, you calling it, substitutions?
Well, I mean, you can say the 7, the major 7, the 9, all that stuff, but there's more than that. He does passing chords, but he does like a 9, or an added something, or changed the
right.
bass note.
I heard something today.
This morning,
he
yeah.
did, what was that song? Here I Have the Worship, like we've heard it a million times,
awesome.
It's a 3-chord song.
Right.
But
he
was putting,
in minor,
they're
I mean,
passing chords.
Yes.
Kind of.
Totally, even
like
though
turnaround,
it's not
like
destroying
five,
the melody
six.
Whatsoever, but it just
right.
sounds so full
yeah.
and good.
Hmm. Exactly what he did. But you know, anything.
Can you give us some ideas?
Just knowing some different. You know, like anytime you have a dominant 7 in a song, we'll always usually open the door to maybe to trying the 9 chord or flat 9. Depending on the, you have to understand the direction maybe the next change is going to. In a song that's got a, that's simply maybe a 4 or 5 1 chord, you always have the 2 will work instead of the 4. You know, there's simple jazz substitutions you can do. Anything time you're going to, from C to D minor, you could do a, well, that's usually any time finding the what's the 5 chord to the chord you're going to. Okay? So what we have here, if you have C and D minor is the chord that you're going to, so the chord you stick between them is an A7.
The 5 of D.
Okay? So it's the 5 of D. Okay? So you have an A7 or an A7 flat 9 or an A7 sharp 5 flat 9. Or a 13 sharp 11. Might like it too much.
No, seriously, say those again. What are the options?
Like I said, an A7, A7 sharp 5, or add the flat 9. And these kind of things will work just about in front of anything. So let's see. The 5 chord with the 3rd in the bass. It has a half step lead up to that note. So in that case, I'm playing a B7 with a D sharp in the bass to the E minor.
So up the 3rd,
yeah, using the 3rd. See, so remember, so much of the great thing about jazz and the reason those chords won't change is because they have good leading tone qualities. Okay, and the leading tones tend to be what in harmony, it's the natural direction that the chord wants to pull you. Because there's a thing about like the two, why does 2-5-1 drive jazz? It's because the chords complement each other harmonically. So there's the 2-5-2-1. I don't really, I have some jazz chops, but I probably wouldn't put myself in some of these guys' shoes. So, but my knowledge of it is basic enough that D minor, which can also be a 4, instead. So, C, D minor, G, C,
done as D minor, D flat, C. Okay, what's that? That's using a different substitution for the five, okay? And what that is called a tritone substitution. There's a word for you to look up on the internet. Tritone substitution. Okay, the reason that is, it works, is because inside of any dominant chord, any G7, A7, whatever, is a tritone. The tritone is basically, it's the three whole steps apart. Okay? Those two notes. Okay? What they are in a G chord is the B and the F. Okay? This is really good basic jazz theory here. So you have a B and a 7. Excuse me, a 3 and a 7 in the chord. Okay? From that, if you drop the tritone of the bass, the 3 and 7 switch place and become the 7 and the 3. Do you understand what I'm saying? Can you see it? Because what I'm saying is, so the C sharp now, the F is the 3rd, and the B is now the 7th. I guess the drum seminar just clicked in. They've been in there all along. What have they been doing for an hour? That was the drum seminar for an hour. What have they been doing?
I think they pulled the headphones off.
They must have. So again, so stay with me. G, B, F. If I change the bass note, the two notes haven't changed. They've just swapped position in the harmony. Instead of being the 3rd and 7th, now they're the 7th and the 3rd. But all I did was change the bass note. But that is now take right to C. It pulls you down to C major. Okay? So, you know, a lot of jazz you'll hear was not doing all that busy, fancy 2-5-1 stuff. It's just. And a lot of the other things you can do is just to create, like, it's just adding more color. To the chord. Instead of just D minor G, C, you can have a D minor 9 to a G13. And it's just adding more color tones to the basic harmony. Great chords inside of a C major 7 to add is your sharp 11. It's very much, in essence, taking a C chord and putting a D triad over it, which becomes a polychord here. Those are good things to use. Now, there's very, you know, there we tend to have more of a nuts and bolts, and it's pretty just... I would say our style and our worship is fairly rock driven, not too jazzy. We don't, you know, it depends. You know, it depends also on the players that you have supporting you. If your bass player doesn't have any jazz chops, you might not want to step too far outside of the realm, because you could end up with you know, if he doesn't have an ear for it, you can have some serious clashing going on between notes. So. But if you can explain and communicate some of those changes to them that you're going to use, that can add some great substitution qualities. So generally, that's what the term for it is substitutions. If you want to study more about that, there are some, if you go to any bookstore or any guitar center type of music store or any of your sheet music stores, we'll usually have books on jazz improvisation. Look for something that's basic and that you can understand and study some of the things what they talk about in theory. And remember, a lot of what they're going to start with is just understanding these numbers here. Because everything's built on that. When I started studying harmony at 15 and really digging into it, you know, I found the first thing you discover is voicings, you know. Taking the triad, that not everything is a triad. There's a first inversion. We know first inversion, second inversion, and those mean they're the different scale tones of the chord that you build your chord on. And then when you add the seventh,
Now you have a third position because you've added another note. First inversion, second inversion, third inversion. Just moving the bottom note and back to root. Okay? Same thing goes in just about every chord that you can find. So then you find that there's different positions all moving up and down. And there's compressed voicings, which can be very close. And you can also have them expanded out. Not even playing the bass is one way. So finding ways of exploding the chords out. I picked up a book not too long. It's just a book on piano voicings and different ways of spreading them out. And so I've been pushing 50. I'm starting to study some different add to my technique a little bit. Here's important for us to keep studying as we grow older. So I'm trying to add even to my knowledge of just different ways to approach it. So we're coming down to 5:30. We've got any other questions? Anything else I could cover with you on this?
If you got somebody on piano, what's your zone on a keyboard?
What do you mean?
If there's somebody else playing the piano, just straight piano. What kind of pads do you normally look for?
Well, it depends, I guess. If I'm just like a second keyboard player, you mean?
So you don't have to cover any of the basic piano.
Yeah, you know, I guess it depends on the sound. I don't think you don't want to get, you don't want to get too low because you're muddy with the bass notes. And I don't think you want to get too high unless you're using maybe have a bell melody or a string melody that's a little higher or something like that. But you can you should be able to live in the same general range. I don't think necessarily that you have to worry about like you're encroaching on my territory. I mean, most all music happens between these, pretty much these four octaves here, two octaves below C, two octaves above, So I think a lot of times what you can cover is, especially when you get to padding and adding color like that, is in those cases you want to be supporting the root and the fifth. And maybe not getting too much in the way of those. You'll see a lot of the music they're writing now. You got guitar players using cut capos, and they're using a lot of these. And we didn't actually talk much about that. Different versions of what's called the 1 and the 4. So you got C and F. Okay? Right here. Okay. Yes. Yes, indeed. It's built around those kind of... It's built around those kind of intervals. What are they? If you take the C chord, or the C, it's 5, and add the 2, the D. I'm just moving the bass note. I'll loop you into a B flat. That are built on the fourth. They can be called two chords, or they can be called suspensions, which is the sus four. And those are different voicings for those as well. And they allow you to really pick a place and live there. And the same thing, like I said, the guitar players are using capos that force them into those kind of voicings.
so they can play very open voicings, and they're playing the two. So the two is a very strong chord. Most Steely Dan music is built around the two chord, or what they used to call the moo chord, was a take the triad and move the root up to the second. So there's your Steely Dan chords, are like reeling in the ears. Also, that works good for when we're talking about the different styles. Just things you can break up. There's a broken chord style. Broken chord is good. Or arpeggio. And these things will work good in a lot of different situations, too. Even rock styles, you can be going... finding a place to live. All the years I've been playing all these great songs, and how deep they've gotten into me. And it's such a blessing to be able to sit down and just go off into another world as you're just worshiping, like you and the piano, singing if you want, or just playing. But you know that you can have so many songs that are just right at your fingertips, and it just makes it really, really cool. And it's really a blessing to be able to have that kind of instrument, to be able to, or any instrument, in fact. You know, I find such a great time. And you know, all those years, just to kind of close with this, all the years that I spent chasing the dream of being in a band or this or having some kind of success, none of it compares to the joy I have worshiping Christ Jesus in my church. All of, you know, I believe that everything I learned those 36 years of my life before I came to the Lord, all they did was prepare me for the 11 years that I've had since. And so I just encourage you to just dig for the knowledge where you can. There's only so much I can show you in here. You know, I'm sorry I didn't have time to work up my own, like a book filled with all my different things, but there are so many materials out there available to you. If you need assistance to try to expand your horizons and do what you're doing, do it, but do it with, like I said, do it with a joy, because none of the music I did before really mattered at all. What matters is what I do on that altar and what I do for my church. Because there are people who are making decisions out there, and they're, you know, what we support them in worship. And as you read, if you do studies and stuff, you know, we're the tribe of Judah as worshipers. We're out there in front of the army of Israel. I mean, what kind of army? I mean, you know, you look at what's happening over there in the Middle East right now, and God bless them. It's a tough road. But what was it like sending your musicians out in front of the army? You know? And the sound of them worshiping God was enough to drive their enemies back. So if we could somehow capture that kind of power with what we do, you know, the armies of hell can't stand against us if we do that. So, question?
I think when you're saying that, how many times do you go out there and you open your service with the worship, and you see somebody sitting there, and they might have a really bad week,
yeah.
And their hearts are melted.
Yeah.
That worship, and by pretty soon you're like, you know, maybe on your third song, and they're weeping.
Yeah.
You know, and you're thinking that's the purpose. That's what you're supposed to be doing.
Exactly, and what we do, you know, is never to our own glory, but it's the glory of God, and we're just adding to what our churches are trying to do. And I just wish you blessings and good luck with it. And you know, I'm going to be here all week. If you got any other questions or anything like that, I'll be here through Saturday, and we can talk more.
But I thank you for your time, and I hope this was a blessing to you. All right, thanks.